continue the discussion on the invocation, which we nearly completed in the morning. Who would like to read? Knowledge of the Brahman.
Another name is Shruti. Shruti means that this knowledge has to be received simply by oral perception. The Vedas instruct that in order to understand transcendental knowledge, we have to hear from the authority. Transcendental knowledge is from beyond this universe. Within this universe is material knowledge, and beyond this universe is transcendental knowledge. We cannot even go to the end of the universe, so how can we go to the spiritual world? Thus, to acquire full knowledge is impossible.
So actually, scientists are also trying to get complete knowledge. They are trying to get what they call as a theory of everything. One theory, one formula, which will explain the whole creation. But the more they are trying to inquire in this way, the more they are finding that the universe is not as simple as it seems. That even to explain the behavior of matter is not so easy. And often matter seems to behave in ways which seem incomprehensible. You know, many scientists, actually since the quantum theory was proposed around 1930s, since then there has been no major theoretical advance in science. There has been remarkable technological advance in sense of faster, smaller, better gadgets coming up. But in terms of conceptual understanding, many scientists are talking about what is called the dead end of physics. They are not able to understand matter any further. And some scientists have started saying that the basic assumption of science might itself be wrong. What is the basic assumption? That the world around us is understandable. See, without having that assumption, scientists would not be able to do any research on that the world behaves according to rational patterns. And we can understand those rational patterns by our study. But the way matter seems to behave, especially at the subatomic level and at the cosmic level, it seems that many scientists are doubting this, that nature itself may not be understandable, for its behavior may not be in accordance with our patterns of rationality and logic. So therefore, even for science, on one side, because of the technology that is producing, is increasingly getting better and better, people are enamored by it. But on the other side, as far as conceptual understanding is concerned, science is hitting a stone wall, and they just don't know how to penetrate it. So Prabhupada makes the point that if you can't understand the material world also, how can you possibly understand the spiritual world? Yeah. Something else to read?
There is a spiritual kind. There is another nature which is beyond manifestation and non-manifestation. But how do you know that there is a sky, there is planets and heavens are returning?
Oh, really? Yeah, right. I'm sorry.
There is treatment in
Brahmin. Oh, I thought this is the same thing. There is spiritual kind, there is treatment. Yeah, right. Please. You can read that. So, what we are doing now is this one. The only way to know about transcendence is through Vedas and Krishna. And Krishna is the ultimate goal of the Vedas. That's what we'll be reading now. Now, this is still the only way to know about transcendence is from Krishna. Next paragraph is about Krishna is the goal of the Vedas. Yeah.
There is a statement in the Brahma Sanhita, just ride on the airplane which runs at the speed of mind. All material airplanes can run 2000 miles per hour. But what is the speed of mind? You are sitting at home, you immediately think of India, say 10,000 miles away, and at once it is in your home. Your mind has gone there. The mind's speed is so swift. Therefore, it is said that if you travel at this speed for millions of years, you will find that the spiritual sky is unlimited. It is not possible even to approach it. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is that one must approach. The word compulsory is used. A bona fide spiritual master, a guru. And what is the qualification of a spiritual master? He is one who has rightly heard the Vedic message from the right source. And he must be practically firmly established in Brahman. These are two qualities. Otherwise,
which are the two ones Prabhupada is referring to here? Jignyasu Shriyottamam Shabde Paresh Nishnatam Brahmanya Upasamasam. Another one? The word must is used. Tad Vijnanartham Saguru Eva Vichche. Very important verses for talking about the spiritual master. So many times, even when, especially in the Ishokrishad, Prabhupada uses very few exquisite Sanskrit references. There are a lot of translations which are used. One reason is that Prabhupada wrote Ishokrishad in India before he went abroad. And at that time, he did not have a typewriter to type Sanskrit text. So he would often give translations. That's why you will see even in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the number of Sanskrit references are few. There are a lot of Sanskrit verses quoted as translations explicitly, and sometimes many passages are implicit translations. But here, Ishokrishad, very few Sanskrit verses directly will come.
Go ahead.
These are the two qualities. Otherwise, he is not bona fide. This Krishna consciousness movement is completely authorized from Vedic principles. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the actual aim of Vedic research is to find out Krishna. In the Brahma Sanhita, it is also stated Krishna, Govinda, has innumerable forms, but they are all one.
Which is this verse? Advaitam Achyutam Anadi Anantarupam.
They are not
interesting. And the word Advaita is used. So, Jamalishan, Bhayavad Advaita Vedanta. Advaita Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta. So we also accept Advaita. But what is Advaita? There is no Dvaita between Krishna's various forms. Not that we and Krishna are Advaita. So Advaita Acharya is called Advaita because of what? Yeah. Advaita Hari Advaita Acharya Bhakti Chandana. It's called Advaita because he is not different from Lord Hari. And it's called Acharya because he teaches Bhakti. So sometimes even our Acharya use the words which may sound impersonalistic, because you know the impersonalists don't have a monopoly on those words. Those words are universal. That's why we see that in Sarvabhaumatajaya got a sort of paranoia, phobia for the word Brahman, isn't it? Sorry, Mukti. Mukti padeta daya bhak. So, no, we should use Bhakti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, Mukti is there, you don't have to change what Vyasadeva has given. But you have to understand it in the proper context.
They are not like our forms, which are tangible. This form is intangible. My form has a beginning, but his form has no beginning. It is Ananta, and his form, so many multi-forms, has no end. My form is sitting here and not in my apartment. You are sitting there and not in your apartment. But Krishna can be everywhere at one time. He can sit down in Goloka Vrindavan and at the same time he is everywhere, all pervading. He is original, the oldest. But whenever you look at a picture of Krishna, you will find a young boy 15 or 20 years old.
Yes, hold on. Now, normally, impersonalists feel that if we say that God has a form, the form will limit God. Prabhupada says, I am sitting here, I am not in my own. So, you say, why do you limit God by giving him a form? God is unlimited. By giving him a form, you are limiting him. So what is our reputation? Yeah? Yes. It's saying that God does not have a form, also not limiting him. We talk about limitation. Form is among the most attractive features of anything in this world. It's not the most attractive feature. Isn't it? Yes. You know, the film stars, the sports stars, the cars, the cell phones, the rockets, everything has a form. And the forms are all attract. So form is a very important opulence. And when we say God does not have a form, that is also a limitation. That's one answer. But the real problem is that, you know, how to reconcile God's infinity with his form. If God is, okay, you say that form will limit, but in formlessness, it is also a limitation because you are depriving God of something. Any other arguments to refute this? Yeah?
Whose energy become limited? Like, he has a form, but he has energy.
Yeah, his energy is all pervading, he is going around, yeah. Maya tatamidam sarva jagat avyakta murtina. Objectable. Of course, the non-physical form, all the energy is pervading the whole creation. Yes.
Brahma, Paramatma, how do one piece of the deck?
Yes.
Then he's all pervading and he's doing everyone's part as Paramatma and Bhagavan in his own standard.
Yeah, where God has a threefold existence. This is the unique insight of the Gaudiya Vishnu Sampradaya. This verse is known to all sampradayas because it is there in the Bhagavata. But this understanding of this verse, Vadantita Tattvanga Tattvam Yad Jnanam Advayam, this verse will be discussed in detail in the next purport, invocation purport. But Brahmyeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabdyate. Iti Shabdyate, he is known in these three ways. The verse which I just quoted, Mayatthangam Saram, this is a sutra which describes these three aspects. So, mayatatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina refers to Brahman. By me, in my unmanifested form, the whole world is permitted. Atthani sarvabhutani, the all creation is situated in me. That refers to Paramatma. Eidam dharyate jagat. Paramatma is sustained the whole world. Atthani sarvabhutani na chaham teshu avasthitaha. I am not situated in that world. This refers to Bhagavan. So this verse is a sutra which actually describes all three aspects of the action. I think this point is clear. Brahman is the all-pervasive aspect of God. So that is referred to Mayatatamidam Sarvam Jagat Avyakta Murtina. Then there is, so not only the Avyakta Rupa, but there is also Vyakta Rupa which is manifesting the whole world. Matthani Sarvabhutani. So it's not manifesting, supporting the whole world. That is Paramatma. And then there is a form of the Lord who is completely beyond this world. Na chaham teshu avasthitaha. So I am not situated in this world, I am beyond this world. That is Bhagavan. Yes. Any other points? No, there is nothing. That's why it's a unique insight of the Vaishnava Acharya. Now, he, Uchi Goswami, in the Chatsandarbha, especially in the Paramatma Sandarbha, he quotes elaborately to say that these three words are not just random names of the Absolute Truth. It has a lot of analysis. He quotes especially Padma Purana, Vishnu Purana, iti Brahma Shabdyate, iti Paramatma Shabdyate, iti Bhagwan. शब्द थे. दैट मीन्स व्हाट डज ब्राह्मण मीन, व्हाट डज परमात्मा मीन, व्हाट डज भगवान मीन. इन जनरल दिस कैन बी डिफरेंट नेम्स फॉर द एब्सोल्यूट ट्रुथ. दैट वन एब्सोल्यूट ट्रुथ समटाइम्स वी कॉल्ड एज ब्राह्मण, समटाइम्स परमात्मा, समटाइम्स भगवान. बट इन दिस वर्स व्हाई दिस थ्री नेम्स ओनली आर यूज्ड, व्हाई नॉट तत्त्वमिद् ज्ञानम् अद्वैतम् गोविंदेति मुरारी कृष्ण शब्द थे. Anything would be used. Why are these three particular words used? So he says elsewhere in the other scriptures, other Vaishnava scriptures, he shows how these words have specific meanings. And then based on those meanings, see, always there has to be, when you understand scripture, there has to be cross-referencing and supporting of one's arguments. So this verse surely doesn't say that it's a hierarchy, but the very fact that these three distinct names are juxtaposed means placed together, indicates that there is some deeper meaning. And then look at the specific usages of these words in certain contexts where they are given in a defining sense, then we can understand that they are referring to a hierarchy. Okay. Yes? How do you think in terms of spiritual form?
We try to conceive in
terms
of spiritual.
Yeah. We can't conceive, but we can at least accept the concept. Yeah, let's say the argument in the opposite. Okay, you say that form limits God. So let us deprive God of form. Will that make him unlimited? This particular room has a form, and therefore it is limited in shape. If somebody puts a bomb and explodes it, the form will get destroyed. Will the formless heat be limited or unlimited? Will the formless heat be limited or unlimited? Limited. So you removed form, did you bring unlimitedness over there? No. So, just by removing form, we don't make object unlimited. So, matter, whether it is with form or without form, is limited. And what makes God unlimited is not that he has form or he does not have form. What makes God limited is that he is spiritual. And because he is spiritual, he can have a form and still be unlimited, because that is the nature of spirit. Anoraniyan, mahato mahiyan. So, at the if you say that, okay, actually there's a in that book on deity worship, idol worship, or idol worship. Have you seen this book? That recent book, Idol Worship or Ideal Worship? Oh, okay. That's a book that I wrote recently. The one full chapter is about, does God have a form? Elaborately that is discussed over there. So, then this argument can be taken further. Okay, if you say, if you have form for God, then God cannot exist everywhere. Isn't it? Because God will be limited. Okay, if you take this logic itself further, if you say God does not have a form, then that will not make him exist everywhere, that will make him exist nowhere. Isn't it? See this logic further? Form limits God. Okay, because if he has form, he does not exist everywhere. But if he does not have form, then he will exist nowhere. If we are going to drag a material conception onwards onto God, but the problem is not that God has a form or no form, the problem is that we are dragging a material conception on God. And that is what creates the problem. So God has a spiritual nature, and that spiritual nature, he can have form and be unlimited, he can be without form and be unlimited also. Both ways he can be unlimited. And we see that in the form of Brahma. How many times did Krishna show Vishwaroop? Two times? Three, four. Interesting. Okay, which are the?
Two times to Mother
Yashoda. Okay. Correct. Two times, actually Mother Yashoda I showed twice. Yeah, of course, we are talking about Krishna here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also showed. He is also Krishna. Yeah, he is also Krishna. Chintami Rami.
So yeah, twice actually, once he showed when he was eating mud, another time was when she was offering him breast milk. At that time he showed once to Mother Ishara and once to Arjuna in the battlefield, and before that to Duryodhana. Now when he showed the form to Duryodhana, he did not show the Kala Rupa. So, you know, the Vishwarupa exhibits two aspects. How God is all pervading in time, and God is all pervading in space, and is all pervading in time. So Arjuna could see past, present and future also. He got temporary omniscience, he got. And that's how he saw, actually all the living entities are also getting destroyed. Now he did not show that to Duryodhana. Duryodhana, Dronam, Bhishmam, Dronam, Jayadratham, all of them are surveys are seen by the Mukha, that they are entering into the mouth and they are all getting destroyed. So that part was not shown to Duryodhana. So otherwise you would have no mood left to fight. So how can you fight with the Vishwarupa? But the point is that Krishna has exhibited how, although his form appears to be very small, so small that it can fit on Mother Isha's lap, but it can conceal the whole universe within it. Now, so after talking about the all pervasiveness of space or the transcendence to space of God's form, that means God is not limited to material space into a specific location in the material space. Then Krishna Prabhupada talks about the transcendence of God to material time. Material time does not act on God. Now it may act on God if he wants up to a particular age. So by the action of time, which is by his choice, the Lord may age from his child infancy, childhood to fresh youth. But he never goes beyond that. As the Prabhupada is saying, we never see any picture of Krishna getting old. Now somebody will say, okay, you only have Krishna growing old, you don't draw a picture of Krishna growing old. And there is no picture of Krishna growing old. No, that is not the point. The pictures are drawn based on scriptural description. And if you look at scriptural description, Krishna is described as a fresh youth even when he was in Dwarka. When he was a king and he had many queens, not only many queens, he had sons and grandsons. So he was very young. So that's the difference. Yes,
So, somebody can say, okay, I take water, I boil it, they are pervading now. So, everything is formless, they are made in the fire, all pervading. Well, there are two different arguments. One is, you change the state of water. That is, you have to take iceberg and you cool it. So, iceberg has a form, when you heat it,
then what happens, it becomes much water. It pervades everywhere. So iceberg has a particular form, it finds a particular place in the ocean. And he explains the standard argument given by the Mayavadis, modern Mayavadis. They say, just as the temperature of the water, same water will appear as iceberg to some at a particular temperature, and it will appear as liquid flowing water to others at another temperature. So like that, when the temperature of your consciousness is heated by bhakti, an absolute truth will appear as having form. And when it is cooled by jhan, it will appear as all pervading Brahman.
So they do excellent projection. But there are three problems with it.
First problem is, you know, you're mistaking, first you're saying the absolute truth. That absolute truth is water, which may appear as iceberg or water or liquid water. But then you're, so what is changing over there is the object. But what you are changing here is your own consciousness. So you are misplacing the analogy. Understand? Yeah. Difference? What is changing in the analogy is the object being observed. But here what is being changed is your own consciousness. It's not the object being observed which is changed. Anyway, that is, if it's too difficult to understand, don't bother about it. The point is that there is no scriptural basis for such an analogy. So, but the thing is, even if you argue that way, that water when evaporated spreads everywhere, those particular water molecules won't become all pervading. They still have their localized existence only. So all that happens is the water molecule's form is no longer visible to us, as it was visible when it was in a liquid form or in a solid form, whichever way you want to make it. So it's not that that particular water molecule becomes all pervading.
Now there are some places in the scripture where the analogy of river, water entering into the ocean is used. And it is just as the water enters into the ocean, you know, like that the soul enters into the absolute. But this is not the only analogy that is used. And even if we take this particular analogy, that doesn't prove anything in itself. Because, as our Acharya explained, that we have to see other verses. Samayivam shajivanoke yomuta sanatana. This is called sanatana. That tve vaham jahatunasam. There's no beginning, there's no end to jivatma. So when such word analogies are at all given, so we are talking about two examples now. One is this iceberg and water, or water and gas. This is not a Shastri example. But the Shastri example is as water enters into ocean. Now water enters into ocean, all that it suggests is that we return to our nature. Does it in of itself talk about merging? No, because there are other verses which say the soul continues its existence even eternally. Prabhupada takes that verse, nainam chindanti shastrani, and the soul cannot be cut. So therefore, if we cannot be cut, then how did we become, if we were one in identity with the absolute truth, then how did we become separated from the absolute truth? Isn't it? We cannot be cut. So that means actually we are eternally fragmental parts. And na enam chinnanti asrani. They can never be cut because another word is avikaryo yamuchyate. Avikarya means there is no vikar, there is no change. So if we have a particular identity, now this identity will not change and we become one with the absolute. So therefore we have to see the scriptures in their fullness, not isolated verses or random examples.
Very
standard words, very powerful words. This verse talks about two things. It talks about eko bahuna nirudhati kaman. It talks about one and many. It's clear duality. Eko bahunam. One and many. Duality is there. That's first point. Second is that it is talking about eternity. It's also talking about consciousness. So it is not talking about duality as a conditioned reality, as a reality in the condition stage. Nityo nityanam. There are many eternals, among which there is one supreme eternal. So actually this verse is so clear, it talks about individuality at eternal level and it talks about quantitative differentiation of the individuality. Because eko bahunam yogidhati kama, that one is maintaining the many. So eternal duality or eternal individuality of the soul and the Lord is talked about and quantitative difference is talked about. It's a very clear verse. Okay, as we go in Vishwapachan, we'll come across other sections where we discuss other references also. Yes.
So we just the example of sun, sunshine and sun moon. So what they have explained is that sunshine is like Brahman, that is all pervading, that is accepted. And when we go to sun globe, it is also fixed at one point.
Avibhaktam cha vibhaktam, avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam yo chastipam. The 13th chapter, 17th verse of Krishna describes the Paramatma aspect is situated in one place, but he appears manifested in different place. So that Paramatma examples ideally should be given as just as the one sun that is reflected in different river bodies, water bodies, it appears many. Like that avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam yo chastipam. So there is one Paramatma who is like the Vishnumurti. But that Vishnumurti expands in many forms as the Shiva Daksha Vishnu in the heart of all living beings. That's how it is. So that, just as the sun can be reflected in many water bodies, and it appears many, although it is one. So like that one super soul is expanded in many forms. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam iva cha sthitam. Avibhaktam means not separated. Vibhaktam iva, but as is separated, chastitam, he is situated. He is situated as if he is separated.
statement is that he is situated in Sri.
Yeah, correct.
That is the Paramatma from God.
Correct.
And then Bhagavan is?
Yeah, personality.
And God.
Yes, correct. Yes, so last question. You want to complete this? Yeah.
There is an analogy about this connection actual devotion. River and ocean merging.
Bhaktisamsa explains that the aquatics live in the ocean. So like the pure devotees live in the ocean of devotion. Now that ocean is also different. That ocean is not the ocean of Brahman. That is the ocean of devotion. So yes, that example can also be given. The aquatics live in the ocean, they don't merge in the ocean. Yes. 13:17. Bhagavad Gita. Yes, sir. This will be discussed in the next verse, sir. Because Om Purna Vada Purum Tasa Vata. We come to that. Yes.
Speaking on this analogy of sunshine, sun globe and sun god, you mentioned that the Paramatma aspect is spoken that Garbhu Dasya and Vishnu is finding Suri Dasya and Vishnu, who is reflected.
Correct.
That is with respect to analogy is speaking. But in actuality, he is saying he expands his Paramatma and what is the inference of that?
Okay.
And he said the super soul and the soul in the heart of the
entity. Yeah. Let me take the analogy of the sun, sun god, sun globe and sun rays. That indicates the sun rays indicate the all pervasiveness of Brahma. The sun god indicates the personality of God. The personal feature, that's Bhagavan. So what exactly does the sun globe indicate? The Paramatma is also personal. But Udasina Vadasina Asattam Teshu Karma. So situated as a detached. Paramatma that doesn't directly involve himself in the activities of the divinity. So no analogy in itself is perfect. Now every analogy is like a rubber band. It's stretch a rubber band to fit it to make it fit on a particular object. But if you pull it too much, it will break. So, now no analogy can convey all the aspects of the original principle that is being talked about. So therefore, this analogy does not in itself talk about the Paramatma being a person and the Paramatma as a person existing everywhere in many forms. So then how can that be illustrated using this analogy? And for that we extend the analogy to show that the same sun globe can be reflected in many water bodies. That's the point that is being talked about. How the super soul or the Paramatma can pervade everything. But basically this analogy talks about not the all-pervasive aspect of the Paramatma. It talks about how the same object can be perceived differently at three levels of observation. So the main purpose of this analogy is to show how the same object can be perceived differently at three different levels. That's the main purpose of the analogy. This clear? Yeah, we need different analogies. We'll talk about this. Jiva Goswami goes from one analogy to another. We'll discuss about this in the later verses, especially 4 to 8. When we talk about the absolute truth, at that time we'll talk. Yes? Jiva Goswami is under one. Yeah. Yes, let's move forward. Who is reading? The point we are making is Krishna is not beyond the fabric of space and time, although he has a form.
That is the supreme power. And if you want to search out,
if you want to search out Krishna, by studying the Vedic literature,
see, this is very interesting. Vedesha sarvair ahameva vedyo, Vedesha durlavam adurlavam atma. Prabhupada is illustrating this point. Although Krishna is the goal of the Vedas, it is very difficult to find him in the Vedas. Now why is it like that? Because the Vedas are a desire tree. It reciprocates with our desires. And because most of us have material desires, therefore the Vedas give, they are overwhelmingly materialistic. They are filled with incantations and hymns and prayers for getting material benedictions. And that's why to find Krishna in the Vedas is difficult. Go ahead. There are some references. Devaki Nandana Krishna is there. Let's come to this a little later. It's a very important topic, but we don't want to just discuss, skim over it. Maybe you can note this on as a question. By the end of the course, if we don't cover this, we will devote some time to this again. I think, you know, I will have to carve out questions. Because if we don't hold some questions for a later stage, we will not be able to move forward. So what we will do is, if you feel there is any question that is unanswered today, just give me a chit. And I will see, I have a overview of the Holy Shokishat in my mind. And I will make sure that when we come to that particular section in Prabhupada's purpose, we will cover that. Because otherwise, two things may happen. One is that we will not move forward. And second thing is that we may get overwhelmed by too many concepts coming in from too many directions. And we will not feel a clear understanding unfolding. Okay. Yes.
It may be possible, but it is very difficult. But you can very easily learn about him from his devotee. His devotee can deliver him to you. Here he is, take him. That is the potency, Krishna's devotees. Originally, there was only one Veda, and there was no necessity.
Okay. So now, Prabhupada is starting a new point here. Now from here, last two paragraphs. History of the Vedas and the Vedic Achyuta Srimad Bhagavatam. How these two are written?
So this paragraph,
yeah, paragraph is the P89 is paragraph 89. P10-12 is paragraph 10-12. So like that, which paragraph is talking about what? Let us describe it. Yes, move forward.
Originally there was only one Veda and there was no necessity of reading it. People were so intelligent and had such sharp memories.
I think some of them want to list.
That by once no hearing,
yeah,
from the lips of the spiritual master, they would understand. They would immediately grasp the whole purport. But 5,000 years ago, he asked this, could the Vedas in writing for the people in this age, Kali Yuga? He knew that eventually the people would be short-lived, their memories would be very poor, and their intelligence would not be very sharp. Therefore, let me teach this Vedic knowledge in writing. He divided the four Vedas into four, Rig, Sama, Atharva and Yajur. Then he gave the charge of his Vedas to his different disciples. He then thought of the less intelligent class of men, Stri, Shudra and Dvijabandhu. He considered the women class and Shudra class, worker class and Dvijabandhu. Dvijabandhu refers to those who are born in a high family but who are not properly qualified. A man who is born in the family of a Brahmana but is not qualified as a Brahmana is called Dvijabandhu. For these persons, he compiled the Mahabharata called the History of India and the 18 Puranas. These are all part of the Vedic literature, the Puranas, the Mahabharata, the four Vedas and the Upanishads.
Yes, so yesterday we had come to this point. We started off actually with this, but then we got Yoga Bhrashta. So, we are discussing the Prasthana Trai, Shruti, Smriti and Nyaya. And the Prabhupada is giving an overview, so I was trying to take this overview and then come to this purpose. But we will do this right now. Yesterday I explained this, now we will be discussing this again in detail. So there is a section on Vedavad Rataha Partha in Vidya and Avidya section. So there we will discuss more about all this, but I will just give an overview here. So now four books are enough. Prabhupada talked about twice or two different kind of four books. So Bhakti Shastri talked about these four books. Bhagavad Gita, Ishopanishad and Odi Anoy.
But he said for a devotee, push for Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavata, Bhagavatam, CC and NOD. So now, if you look at the Prasthanatara, Shruti, Smriti and Jnana. So in the Shruti, Prabhupada has given us Ishopanishad. In the Smriti, he has given us Bhagavad Gita. And now Nyaya, Vedanta Sutra, its natural commentary is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have the Srimad Bhagavatam also. And this is the Prasthanatara is given to us. Now the Acharyas explain according to time, place, circumstance. So the Vedanta Sutra was considered very important throughout medieval history when the Acharyas were debating about personalism and impersonalism. But in the modern times, Vedanta Sutra to some extent has lost its importance and Bhagavad Gita has become very important because Bhagavad Gita is more a practical call for action, and we'll discuss the history of Bhagavad Gita more. But during the Indian independence struggle, Bhagavad Gita's importance became much much more because it was a practical book which is not just abstract philosophy, and it was used by the political leaders of India to invoke people to action against the British rule. So anyway, Bhagavad Gita was well known, Vedanta Sutra was not so well known. Srila Prabhupada made Bhagavad Gita the preaching basis. And now we discussed this earlier, that how we had Bhagavad Gita is a Vedic book, Bhagavatam is a Vaishnava book, and CC and Gloria are Gaudiya Vaishnava. This is Srila Prabhupada giving us a complete legacy. Yeah. Go ahead.
Then the Upanishads are part of the Vedas. Then Vyasadeva summarized all the Vedic knowledge for scholars and philosophers in what is called the Vedanta Sutra. This is the last word of the Vedas. Vyasadeva personally wrote the Vedanta Sutra under the instructions of Narada, his Guru Maharaj. Spiritual Master. But still he was not satisfied. That is a long story described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva was not very satisfied even after compiling many Puranas and Upanishads and even after writing the Vedanta Sutra. Then a spiritual master Narada instructed him, "You explain the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta means ultimate knowledge, and the ultimate knowledge is Krishna. Krishna says that throughout all the Vedas one has to understand him. Vedanta krit Veda, Videva Chaham. Krishna says, I am the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra and I am the knower of the Vedas. Therefore, the ultimate objective is Krishna. That is explained in all the Vaishnava commentaries on Vedanta philosophy. We Gaudiya Vaishnavas have a commentary on Vedanta philosophy called Govinda Bhashya by Bhagadeva Vidya Bhushan. Similarly, Ramanujacharya has a commentary and Madhvacharya has one. The version of Shankaracharya is not the only commentary. There are many Vedanta commentaries. But because the Vaishnavas did not present the first Vedanta commentary, people are under the wrong impression that Shankaracharya is the only Vedanta commentary."
Yeah. Shankaracharya's commentary is called as Sharika Bhashya. Ramanujacharya's commentary is called as Sri Bhashya. So it's Nishri Sampradaya. Madhvacharya's commentary is called as Brahma Sutra Bhashya. And our Bhagavad-gita's commentary is called as Govinda Bhashya. So now, in general, it's like, you know, Prabhupada was the first Acharya who preached all over the world. But that is, others may preach, of course nobody is likely to preach more than him. But even if somebody else preaches, that distinction always stays with him. So like that, Shankaracharya wrote the first commentary. And that it is the most widespread commentary. And later on we will see, Shankaracharya's hold on the intellectual world of India was actually stronger than modern science hold on the intellectual world of today. It was very difficult to break through that grip. So, Shankaracharya's commentary, because it is the first, it gained a lot of acceptance. And in general, most people think that Vedanta Sutra teaches impersonalism, merging. But there are a significant number of verses in the Vedanta Sutra also which talk about duality. And we will discuss them as we move forward. But now Srila Prabhupada explains, he is concluding this whole lecture. Move forward.
Besides that,
Vyasadeva himself wrote the perfect Vedanta commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam.
So, now the Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary, it is not a literal commentary. A literal commentary means you take each verse, okay, this is the word, this is the explanation. This is the word, this is the explanation. So, natural commentary means, for example, say, if I give a class now, if I speak something very briefly, and it's not understandable. So, tomorrow I give the same class where I explain the concepts more in detail. Now, basically, the same knowledge is given, but it may not be that I will take one sentence from there and elaborate. Okay, I said this, now I will elaborate this. I said this, I will elaborate this. So, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining the same message, so it's called an actual commentary. But because it is not a verse to verse correspondence, therefore it was not accepted by the Ramanujis. And that's why Balde Vidya Bhushan had to write Govinda Bhashi. And our Acharyas describe that actually Balde Vidya Bhushan is the reincarnation of Gopinath Acharya. Now, Gopinath Acharya was present in the Jagannath Puri temple when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with Sarva Bhattacharya. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sarva Bhattacharya how Bhagavatam is an actual commentary. And that explanation was heard by Gopinath Acharya. And then he came back again to fulfill the desire of, to fulfill the mission of Lord Chaitanya of establishing how Srimad Bhagavatam is an actual commentary by actually writing a literal commentary.
Go ahead.
Srimad Bhagavatam is the first verse of the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadi Asti Yatara. And that Janmadi Asti Yatara is fully explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedanta Sutra simply hints at what is Brahman, the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth is that from whom everything emanates. This is a summary, but it is explained in detail in Srimad Bhagavatam. If everything is emanating from the Absolute Truth, then what is the nature of the Absolute Truth? That is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Absolute Truth must be consciousness, the self-effulgent, Swaraj. We develop our consciousness and knowledge by receiving knowledge from others, but for him, it is said that he is self-effulgent. The whole summary of Vedic knowledge is the Vedanta Sutra. And the Vedanta Sutra is explained by the writer himself in Srimad Bhagavatam. We finally request those who are actually after Vedic knowledge to try to understand the explanation of all Vedic knowledge in Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita.
So, you see how systematically Prabhupada's lecture is proceeding? Prabhupada's title is Teachings of the Vedas. And how does he go through? The first is, as we have four defects, we need the Vedas. Vedas are axiomatic and universal. Vedic knowledge is superior to Pratyakshananuman, then, okay, for the transcendental Vedas, Vedas are the only way to know about the transcendental. And what is the ultimate goal of the Vedas, and how the Vedas are to be known, how the Vedas came to us, and how they are to be known to Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada goes in different directions, but there is one clear flow of thought that is giving us a broad overview. Yes?
Is this Srimad Bhagavatam? How do we
come to know
that Srimad Bhagavatam
is then? That's from the history. Listen, Vedanta Sutra was the essence or the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of the Vedic literature. But he was not satisfied with that. So therefore he wrote a further elaboration based on the instruction of the spiritual master. So, Sotra Maharaj had done some schematic correlation showing that these verses of the Vedanta Sutra are elaborated here. These verses are elaborated here. But that is an outline. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam goes in much more details of what is talked about in the Vedanta Sutra. Now to try to explain how Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, first we will have to study the Srimad Bhagavatam and we have to study the Vedanta Sutra. And then we will have to study the correlation. Sutra Maharaj. Yeah, Sutra Maharaj.
He left his body
now. Yeah, he left his body. Suhotra. Okay, yeah. So, now? Yes. What happened? Going Vashin verse to verse comment.
What is happening? Sorry.
Now, just to the this is the, this is not mantra writing over here, this is the Ishopanishad over here. So before we start the Ishopanishad, the Ishopanishad basically has four sections. So first section explains the absolute truth and how we can live in harmony or in disharmony with the absolute truth. So first verse, the invocation, the first verse describes the absolute truth and the Ishavasya principle. Second verse describes how we have to either live in harmony or we will go to, we have to suffer. Asuryanamate loka. That verse is there. Then after that, okay, I have to live in harmony with the Ishwar, but who is that Ishwar? His attributes are described in the next four verses, 4 to 8, or the five verses. In that, first the absolute truth's attributes are described in apparently paradoxical terms in verses 4 to 5. Then the enlightened vision by which one can understand the absolute truth, that enlightened vision is described, and how that enlightened vision will reconcile the contradictory aspects of the absolute truth that is described in verse 8. So, who is the Ishwara? First, live in harmony with Ishwara. Then, who is the Ishwara? And then, in the next section, verses 9 to 14 talk about understanding and the misunderstanding about Ishwara. How we can get proper vidya. There are two aspects to about Ishwara. One is knowledge, and the second is worship. We are not just meant to know God. After we know God, we have to worship Him. So knowing the right thing, knowing the wrong thing, worshipping the right object and worshipping the wrong object. That is described in the next section. So there are two parallel sections over here. 9 to 11 is one section, 12 to 14 is another section. And then the last is after we understand who is the absolute truth, we understand its basic attributes, we have knowledge and we know how to worship Him. Now then we pray to Him to be revealed, to reveal Himself to us. So prayers to the Ishwara to reveal Himself. And here there is a famous prayer which we often go, Hiranmayena Patrena, please remove the effulgence so that I can see your beautiful face. So the Ishopanishad in this way starts with universal principles of harmony and disharmony in living and moves to prayer to reveal the personal form of the Lord. Okay? So you have, then if you have the hand in top of that, it is there, I think. Which you have got, isn't it? Yeah. So let's go over to the let's start with the first verse now. So rather the invocation. We'll recite it together.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते.
And because He is completely perfect, all emanations from Him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped by complete whole. Whatever is produced from the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because He is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from Him, He remains the complete man.
Continue.
The complete whole, all the supreme absolute truth, is the complete personality of Godhead. Realization of two-person Brahman or of Paramatma, the super soul, is inconceivable with incomplete realization of the absolute truth. The supreme personality of Godhead is Satchidananda Vidya.
realization of impersonal Brahman is realization of his perfect future or his aspect of eternity. His Paramatma realization is realization of his sat and chit future, his aspects of eternity and knowledge. But realization of the personality of Godhead is the realization of all the transcendental features, sat, chit and ananda. When one realizes the Supreme Person, he realizes these aspects of the Absolute Truth in their completeness. Vigraha means form, but the complete whole is not formless. If he were formless or if he were less than his creation in any other way, he could not be complete. The complete whole must contain everything both within and beyond our experience. Otherwise, he cannot be complete.
So, the Prabhupada directly translates Purnam as the personality of Godhead. Somebody will argue, oh, we don't know what that Purnam is. The absolute truth what it is. Then Prabhupada explains that in the Tattva. So now, what Prabhupada says in this paragraph is summarized here in this diagram. So, what is Prabhupada saying? The first paragraph says how? The first paragraph explains how the absolute truth is completely manifest as a supreme personality. So now Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, they are Advaya Tattva. Vadanti Tattva Veda Tattvam Yat Jnanam Advayam. They are Advaya Jnana Tattva. They are non-dual. But still there is a hierarchy. So now when a transcendentalist has realized Brahman, at that time he has realized the eternal aspect of the absolute truth. That means, yes, the body is temporary and I will die, but there is some spirit that is eternal, that is existing forever. So when one has, now what is that spirit, how it exists, how long it where it exists, what are its attributes, that is known, not known, but exists forever. That is the Brahman realization. Aham Brahmasmi. Prabhupada said even Socrates was Brahman realized. He did not know about God, but he said, I am immortal. So when the people tried to kill him, he said, you can't even catch me, how can you kill me? He said, fearlessly, when he was poisoned. So at this level, one understands the sat aspect. Now the important point to understand is, Brahman is not just sat. Brahman is sat chitananda. Because Brahman is not different from Bhagavan. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan are all Satchitananda. But when a soul is Brahman realized, at that time he has realized only the Sat aspect. He has not realized the Chitananda aspect. Now one can realize the Sat aspect of the Absolute Truth by Jnana. By Jnana one understands that, oh, this world is temporary, there is something eternal beyond this world. Then when one moves forward and understands the Chit aspect, that means there is not just eternal existence, there is cognizance, there is consciousness, that there is a super soul who is overseeing this material existence. So then one realizes the Paramatma, Chit aspect of the Absolute Truth. Sat and Chit. Dhana vastita tadgate namanata pashyantiyam yogino. The end of the Srimad Bhagavatam. When obeisance is offered to that person about whom the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is described, that the yogis in their dhyan, they behold this person. Who is that person? That is manifested as the Supreme Lord, but is manifested as the Paramatma. So when the yogis Paramatma realized, he has understood the Sat and the Chit aspects of the Absolute Truth. Now, the Paramatma does not perform pastimes. That's why the Ananda aspect is not manifested in the Paramatma. Beyond that Chitta realization is also the Ananda realization. The Paramatma is seated as a detached, Dasi-dva-dasi-dva, as I was quoting earlier. In the 9th chapter, 9th verse, Krishna describes this. Udasi-dva-dasi-dva, it's detached. Okay, whatever you want to do, I'll facilitate your desires. But the Paramatma does not manifest, that is manifested by the Bhagavan. This is Ananda. So the Bhagavan delights in performing pastimes. And he delights in performing pastimes, the pastime is the Ananda. So that aspect of the Absolute Truth, which is realized through bhakti, is the most complete aspect, because there they understand that Lord is eternal, he is conscious, but he is conscious not just in a passive sense, but he is conscious in an active, dynamic, reciprocal sense. He reciprocates the loving service of his devotees, and that is the most complete realization. So, that's why Brahman is also a realization of Absolute Truth, but it's incomplete. Paramatma is also a realization of Absolute Truth, but it's incomplete. Complete realization is Bhagavan. Okay? Yes, please.
That is the Paramatma aspect. We say that it's like observer, detached. We also mentioned in the Chaitya Guru, so when there is a sincere seeker, then it says that the Lord inspires him to go and take the right shelter and right association. So in that sense, the Paramatma is actually reciprocating with the divinity. If he's sanctioning, that is also a certain level of reciprocation. And for a devotee who is spiritually seeking, then it becomes more involved.
Yeah, good question. Is this Paramatma reciprocating the sincere seeker or the devotee? Chakravarti Pal explained that in 9th chapter, which is that verse, Samoham Sarubhuteshu Name Dveshosti Napriya Ye Bhajanti Tumam Bhaktya Mai Te Teshu Chapyaham. So the first two lines of this verse refer to Paramatma, and the next two lines refer to Bhagavan. And the same person is situated in the heart, but sometimes he manifests as Paramatma, sometimes he manifests as Bhagavan. But the same person, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dveshosti Napriya, I'm equal voice. I don't envy anyone, nor am I partial to anyone. But ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya, if you try to serve me, mahi te teshu chaptyam. I am with you, I am in you, and you are in me. We are intimately connected. So, as soon as the soul desires to serve Krishna, then that Paramatma manifests as Bhagavan. And as Bhagavan, he follows not Udasina Udasina, he follows ye thamam prapadyante. So, in that sense, as soon as the soul becomes a seeker of the Absolute Truth, that Udasin aspect is not there. The Lord becomes very actively concerned. But if the Lord, the soul is not seeking, then the Lord says, okay, whatever you want, you do, you bear the consequences for that. That's how it is. As soon as the soul desires to turn towards Krishna, Krishna doesn't remain Udasin. He becomes very actively concerned. That's why if you see, what is the Premana Jana Chulita Bhakta Vidoshinina? Santaha Sadai Vardayeshu Vilokayanti. Now what is the Santasthi in the heart? They don't do the forearm Shiva Raksha Vishnu. Whom they say? Yamshama Sundar Machinja Gunaswarupam. So for the pure devotee, that same super soul who is Shiva Raksha Vishnu 400, he manifests as Shama Sundar. That means, we are not talking here about the super soul. As I said in the beginning only, Brahma, it is not that the super soul is Achit. The super soul is Sachitananda, Brahman is also Sachitananda. But we are talking about the not the level of the Absolute Truth. We are talking about the level of the realization of the seeker. The seeker who has realized Paramatma has realized the Satanchit aspect. He has not yet realized the Ananda aspect. We are not talking about the Paramatma. Paramatma is Sachitananda only. We are talking about what the seeker has realized. Which aspect has he realized? Is this clear?
Paramatma realization, he may know the personal form of the Lord, that is the Vishnu form with 4 handles, but there is no reciprocation with that form, because meditating.
Yeah, Shankaras. Generally speaking, Prabhupada explains in on Sisi Purport that those who are meditating on the Paramatma, if they somehow come under the notion that I am that Paramatma, then they will merge in Brahma. If they understand that I am the servant of the Paramatma, then they will only Shankaras in the spiritual world. But only when they get association of devotees, then they can go to some higher levels of realization. So that way, there are both observations, you know, from the, it's like from Paramatma you can come here. Yeah. From Paramatma you can go here or you can come here. Both is possible. You can go to Brahman or you can go to Bhagavan. Go to the spiritual world.
Prabhupada Sarpa only.
Destination
for the Parivartan? Yeah, CC Purport. I can show it to you later. Understand this very clearly. See, Paramatma does not perform pastimes, does not mean that he is not Satchitananda. Every form of the Lord has a particular mission. And when he comes with a particular mission, then he focuses on that mission. So what is the mission of the Paramatma? The Paramatma's mission is to deliver the conditioned soul. So therefore, the Paramatma is focused on that mission. By his pastimes are the spiritual world shall going on. The volume was not adequate? Increase. Okay. So, yes. We are not saying that the Paramatma is not Satchitananda. Paramatma is Satchitananda, but when he is in this particular world, he is not manifesting his Ananda aspect. Just like Vishnu is also Krishna only. So Vishnu does not manifest the Madhuryas, primarily the Aishwarya aspect. So like that. The Paramatma does not manifest the aspect of performing pastimes. Yes.
You were telling of Brahma realization, the person realizing, what is the Dharma? Just by realizing, my question is just by realizing, how can one person transcend the three modes of material nature and cycle of birth and death, just by realizing the difference? These are something imposed by nature, three modes of material nature and cycle of birth and death. And realizations are individual. But so situation appears to be incompatible. How can nature free them from
at the question is that the realization of the eternity of the absolute truth, how does that free one from one's own individual bondage in mental nature? Well, at this level, generally speaking, one thinks that I am one with that absolute truth. So the Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi and Sarvam Khalu Milam Brahma. That absolute truth is Brahman, I am Brahman. So, we consider the impersonal realization as a transitional realization from which one has to move forward. So, at this level, one understands that there is a Brahman and I am also a Brahman. So, because I am not the body, I have nothing to do with the body, and the bodily urges and bodily desires cannot satisfy me. Therefore, I become detached from that. And that's how one becomes liberated. So, it's not just a realization that absolute truth is eternal, but I am also eternal. Is the realization of one's own eternal aspect and the realization that there is an underlying spiritual reality to all of existence which is eternal. And the understanding that I belong to that spiritual reality. Sarva bhuteshu enaikam bhavam avyayam ikshate. In the 18th chapter, Krishna talks about knowledge is the mode of goodness. He describes that one sees that there is an imperishable spirit which pervades all living beings, including perception or knowledge in the mode of goodness. So it's not realizing that the picture of the absolute truth, but realizing I am also Sattva, I am also eternal. There's one all pervading spirit and I belong to that spirit, or rather I am that spirit, whatever is one's realization. So because one understands that one is spiritual and not material, that's how it becomes free from the pulling of Maya, or the bondage of Maya.
So, you were explaining that Paramatma realization is Satchit realization. So, Satchit realization, what is this aspect? Does it mean that the soul, he knows the relationship with Bhagavan, or he does not know? In spite of knowing the relationship with Bhagavan, the relationship is not.
No, he understands the absolute truth. There is a conscious being. The conscious being who is observing me, who is overseeing me, upadrashta anumantaja vartha bhukta maheshwara. But what is my relationship with him? That is not clear. That is true. Okay? Let's move forward. So the first paragraph talked about
So basically this world is talking about how everything is complete in this world. The absolute truth is complete, that which comes from Him is also complete. And I think we need to complete this purport too. We'll have questions at the end if we complete this purport. We'll not have any more questions now. So, Om Purnamadaha, that absolute truth is complete. Purnamidam, this material world is complete. So now Srila Prabhupada in the first part of the purport explains Purnamadaha, how that absolute truth is complete. That absolute truth is complete as the personality of God. Purnamidam, how this material world is complete, that Srila Prabhupada will explain in the next paragraph.
The complete whole, the personality of Godhead, has immense potency, all of which are as complete as He is. Thus, this phenomenal world is also complete in itself. The 24 elements of which this material universe is a temporary manifestation are arranged to produce everything necessary for the maintenance and sustenance of this universe. No other unit in the universe need make an extraneous effort to try to maintain the universe. The universe functions on its own time scale, which is fixed by the energy of the complete whole. And when that schedule is completed, this manifestation. When that schedule is completed, temporary manifestation will be annihilated by the complete arrangement of the complete whole. All facilities are given to the small complete unit, namely the living being, enables them to realize the complete whole. All forms of incompleteness are experienced due to incomplete knowledge of the complete whole. The human form
of life. Wait a minute. The second paragraph is talking about how the material world is complete. Now, there is a perennial debate going on between the atheists and the theists. And the theists say, can't you see how much God has provided? You know, God has given heat, light, air, water, food. How can you be so ungrateful and so unintelligent as to say there is no God? And the atheists argue, can't you see that there is so much wrong in this world? You say God is providing rains, there are floods, there are droughts. You say God is providing food, there are famines. You say God is providing heat, there is so much cold, there is so much extra temperature. So much wrong in this world. How can you say that there is divine? This is a perennial debate going on between the theists and the atheists. The atheists point to the evidence of providential design. Theists point to the evidence of design. And atheists point to the sources of to the apparent chaos in the material world. And both try to prove their point. But what both of them miss out, the design argument is primarily advanced by the Christians to try to prove the existence of God. It's called as rational theology. In the Vedic literature, the design argument is not used much. In fact, Ramacharya and Sri Bhashya refute the design argument. And in Vedanta Sutra, and in Vedanta Sutra in the third aphorism, Shastra Yoni Tvat, and we can know about the absolute truth only through Shastra. And he uses, I know the kind of refutations of the design argument that he gives. 600 years after Ramacharya, Immanuel Kant, he came up with those same refutations. And when those refutations came up, you know, actually the European psyche completely shook, and the Christian worldview shook and collapsed. Because the refutation is so strong. So sometimes people may think that, you know, the Vedic philosophers are very gullible. But you see high level of skepticism. So now why is Ramacharya refuting the design argument? He has another agenda over there. See the Shastra Yogitvat, see the third aphorism in the Vedanta Sutra. First is Thato Brahma Jagyasa Janmadi Asyataha. Enquire about that Brahman. What is that Brahman? That Brahman is the source of creation, maintenance and everything. And Shastra Yonitvat. How can you know that Brahman? How can you inquire about that Brahman? By Shastra. And in the fourth verse is Sattu Satan Samanvayat. That Shastra, Samanvayat is harmonization. So how do we understand Shastra? That seems to be a contradiction in Shastra. No, when you do the harmonization of all the contradictory explanations, contradictory statements of Shastra, then you will understand that absolutely. So in fact, these first four verses are literally the battlefields in the Vedantic realm. And just Athato Brahma Jigyasa, Sri Bhashya, Ramacharya writes a 100-page commentary for that. And these four verses, Athato Brahma Jigyasa, Janmadi Asyataha, Shastra Yonitvat, Tattu Samanvayat. How many words? 11 words. So 11 words, there is a full book written by Jiva Goswami called Chatur Sutti Tika. There is four sutras, a tika, a commentary on that. So Radhakar Radhikaramantu who had come here, you know, he has done his PhD in this Chatur Sutti Tika on the four verses of Vedanta Sutra. So now there was a Mimamsa philosopher Udayan who was using the design argument to prove the existence of God, and Ramacharya wanted to refute him. And Ramacharya used three strong arguments to refute the design argument, and they are very powerful arguments. First he says, okay, even if you say there is design, well, you see, there is so much suffering in this world. There could be an evil designer, not a good designer. Isn't it? The designer is not God who is relevant, it could be the devil. Because we see the body is designed to grow old, get diseased and suffer. You are suffering. So the designer could be not a good designer, but an evil designer. Second argument he uses, that yes, even if you argue that design requires a designer, there could be many designers. Now, different objects could be designed by different people. Why do you say that there is one supreme designer? And third argument he uses, that even if you argue that there is a designer, then why does the designer have to be the all-pervading, eternal, absolute truth that can just be being more powerful than us, who can create? You know, who can create the design in this world? So he says the design argument is inconclusive. Now of course, Ramacharya tactically uses the design argument to refute atheism. So now, that means, you know, there is a very beautiful conversation of Prabhupada where he says that our faith does not come from logic and scripture. It comes only from scripture. But for those who do not accept scripture, we use logic. So, our faith does not come from logic and scripture. It comes only from scripture. For those who do not accept scripture, we can use logic. So, Srila Prabhupada, he is using design argument for what? To logically establish the existence of God. Ramanujacharya is refuting the design argument for what? To establish the necessity of Shastra to know about God. He is saying, if you just go by logic, you say by logic can I infer the existence of God? Yeah, by somebody else by logic can infer the non-existence of God. You know, the Christian will say, yes, see how kind and compassionate God is. So Darwin wrote while refuting that in his book, Origin of Species. So he wrote, you know, my Christian colleagues tell me about the compassion of God, but I am sorry to say, I don't see any compassion in nature. You know, I can see how a tiger pounces upon a deer and rips him apart with the bestial delight and feasts on it. And this is the arrangement of nature. I can see how one predator not only lives on another, one being lives on another, but delights in feasting by killing others. So where is the benevolence of design in nature? I don't see any benevolence. I see only cruelty. And therefore, there is no benevolence. There is savage competition and there is survival of the fittest. So now when we talk about the benevolence of God, the kindness of God, it has to be carefully understood what we mean. See, the fundamental problem with the design argument is that the design does not consider the purpose of the design. Now we use a mobile to talk with people. Now we can also use a mobile to type a sentence. But if I decide to type my new next book on the mobile, What a useless vivek. It's so difficult to type anything over here. Can you type one sentence, takes so much time. This mobile designer, what a useless person he is. He didn't design it properly. Useless designer. So now, any design, however good it is, if we divest the design from the purpose, we can contain that design. Isn't it? A laptop is very useful. But a laptop's design, if it is, oh, my mainframe computer has so much memory and so much a fast hard disk and it can get so much information. But this laptop is so slow. Then a laptop's design's purpose primary is portability. So any design has to be evaluated in correspondence with its purpose. And if it divorces the purpose in the evaluation of the design, then we can fault any design. So both the atheist and the thief, when they are trying to argue whether this world is designed or not, they are assuming a wrong purpose. They are assuming that the purpose of this world is our peaceful and comfortable living in this world. And then from the point of view of peaceful and comfortable living, they are evaluating, is this world designed properly? And one is saying, yes it is, another is pointing out it is not. So, the important thing to understand is what is the purpose of this world. The purpose of this world is not peaceful and comfortable living. The purpose of this world is to serve as a transitory reformatory. It is a transitional place for us to say, during which we reform ourselves. So, is there any place in this world where we see design and we see suffering also? There are two places. One is a prison. In a prison, everything is well designed. The prison bars are well designed. The work schedules are well designed. The meal schedules are well designed. But it's all under the backdrop of suffering. Because design does not necessarily mean that there should be suffering less design. So, the prison is one example that both are there. There is design and there is suffering. So, as I was telling you earlier, no one analogy gives us a complete understanding of the spiritual principle. So now the prison analogy tells us that we have done something wrong and that's why we are in jail. And that's why there is suffering. But the prison analogy does not tell us about the compassionate aspect of God. Is God just a jailer who is keeping us in prison? The Vedic culture differentiates, right? Saying that jailer is not God, it is Durga. So then, where do we see the compassionate aspect of God? For that, we have to switch to another analogy. That is the analogy of the hospital. In a hospital also, there is design and there is suffering. All the instruments are very high-tech design. When you see a CT scan, a MRI, very high-tech design. At the same time, practically everybody in the hospital is suffering. So, the design and the suffering are together in the hospital. But here, the doctor is trying to cure the patient of suffering. So like that, God is trying to help us get rid of suffering. So the material world is complete for its purpose. If we evaluate it as a place for comfortable living, then we can say it's incomplete. And it is incomplete. But it is, if it is a place for purification and rectification, then it is perfect. It is complete. That is what Srila Prabhupada is explaining in this purport. The material world is complete. No extraneous endeavor is needed to set things in order. Things are going on by their own order. But what do we have to do? You know, we have to join in the order of the universe. And if we, to the extent we join in the order of the universe, to the extent we will find that things are orderly. To the extent we try to be, for example, if I start ordering a menu in a hospital, you know, I want pakoras and puris and pulava, and I get some soup and salad, everything disorderly, why are you not giving me what I want? No, I understand that I am here for treatment. When I start participating in the order of the hospital, then I will start understanding if everything is in order. So dharma, when we say dharma refers to the underlying order of the universe. And when we live according to our innate nature, we participate in the dharma of the universe. In the way, we play our role in the harmonious function of the universe. Actually, using science has discovered something remarkable. We see order at the microscopic level, we see order at the macroscopic level, and we see disorder at the human level. Isn't it? It is disorder at the human level. Why? Because matter being insentient follows the order of the cosmos. Human beings being sentient can choose to follow this order, or they can choose to be disorderly. And because we are disorderly, we are getting the disorderly consequences. Okay? That's the second point. Now the third point Prabhupada says, the human form is also complete. How is that complete? Because it offers a complete facility to realize the absolute truth. Go ahead. Yeah.
The human form of life is a complete manifestation of the consciousness of the living being. And it is obtained after evolving through 8.4 million species of life in the cycle of birth and death. If in this human life of full consciousness, the living entity does not realize completeness in realization to the complete whole, he loses the chance to realize its completeness and is again put into the evolutionary cycle by the law of material nature. Because we do not know that there is a complete arrangement in nature of our maintenance, we make effort to utilize the resources of
nature. So, human form is a complete facility. What is the facility for? It is a facility for attaining, re-attaining our eternal life. The labdhva sudurlam idam bahu sambhavante manushyam anityam arthadam api hatinya. See, the material existence is characterized by temporary life. Spiritual existence is characterized by eternal life. So, there are two different circles. And human form is the intersection of the circle. Although human existence is temporary, human existence can become a catapult to the eternal life. Anityam arthadam api sathiraha. What is that? Palana also says, Kaumar maashit prabhu dharman bhagavatamiha durlabam manushin dharma
sadaptam ap
adhruna. So I say that, although it is temporary, it can give us the eternal. So how can it give us the eternal? By our developing our love for the eternal. If in the human form we continue to love the temporary, then we return to temporary existence. But in the human form we love the eternal, develop the love for the eternal, we return the eternal. So in that sense the human form is a complete facility. Now, is the soul complete or is the soul incomplete?
Knowledge of the complete.
Soul is complete or incomplete?
Incomplete.
Okay. Incomplete? How will I say incomplete?
Then it is gone, then it is complete.
Okay, its purpose is complete. So, Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Purna, Purnamidam. Everything that emanates from the complete is complete. So, should the soul also be complete? The soul is complete, then it doesn't need God.
Then it has turned away, designated, dependent.
Yeah. See, the Lord is independently complete. We are dependently complete. We are complete, but our completeness is independent. And that's what Prabhupada will explain through the example of the hand in the next paragraph. You can read this.
Because we do not know that there is a complete arrangement in nature for our maintenance, we make efforts to utilize the resources of nature to create a so-called complete life of sense enjoyment. Because a living entity cannot enjoy the life of the senses without being doted with a complete whole, the misleading life of sense enjoyment is illusion. The hand of a body is a complete unit, only as long as it is attached to the complete body. When the hand is severed from the body, it may appear like a hand, but it actually has none of the potencies of a hand.
Yes, the hand is perfect for its purpose. You know, you can catch, you can drink, you can touch, you can feel, but it is, its completeness is dependent completely. It's disconnected, it is useless. So like that, our completeness is dependent completeness. So in material existence, you know, people say that, no, I want to find my life partner, my better half. That is, I am a half and I need another half, then I become full. It's not like that. Soul is not a half, which means another half to complete. You know, that is at the bodily level. We feel like that. But the soul is complete. But that completeness is in connection with the Absolute. So, what we need to do is, we don't want to find another half. Rather, we want to find our own, rediscover our own fullness by rediscovering our connection with Krishna. But the fact is, everybody in material life feels incomplete. Everybody feels, something is missing, something is lacking in my life. And they think, maybe it's, I don't have a new mobile, I don't have a new car, I don't have a new house, I don't have a new wife, I don't have this, I don't have that, it's never completed. But Prabhupada said, the misleading life of sense enjoyment is,
sorry, what is that sentence, what is?
The misleading life of sense enjoyment is illusion. Now Prabhupada is in the last purport, last paragraph, he says, self-gratification, it leads to illusory completeness. We feel things are complete, but they are not complete. After we achieve it,
there is something more to achieve, I am not satisfied in life.
Now you become a topper in class, you say, no, I want to achieve something more. Get a, have a family, have a job.
Something more.
We are endless. We never achieve completeness. But by devotional service, we become complete. Go ahead.
Similarly, the living beings are part and parcel of the complete whole, and if they are severed from the complete whole, the illusory representation of completeness cannot fully satisfy them. The completeness of human life can be realized only when one engages in the service of the complete whole. All services in this world, whether social, political, communal, international, or even interplanetary,
yeah. What devotee suggested to Prabhupada, and they were named ISKCON. International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we can call it Interplanetary Society for Krishna Consciousness.
So Prabhupada said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to deliver this material, this is earthly planet, primarily. We are going to preach over here, so this is International Society. Yeah, that time international was big enough, so, you know. So there was a small storefront in one small city, one corner of one city. So, yeah.
All services in this world, whether social, political, communal, international or even interplanetary, will remain incomplete until they are dotted with a complete whole. When everything is dotted with a complete whole, the attached parts and parcels also become complete in themselves.
Very interesting. When we become connected, we become complete in ourselves. It's out of contradiction. When we have to connect, then we become complete in ourselves. Yastu atma ratevasya atma truptasya manava atmanyevya santushna tasya karyam navityate. The third chapter, 17th verse of Krishna says that soul was realized. He becomes realized in himself. He becomes the atma ram. So, in this way, Srila Prabhupada talks about four points in the purport. How the Supreme Absolute Truth is complete as the personality of Godhead, how the human material world is complete, how the human form is complete and is a complete opportunity for us, a facility. And in this human form, if we go towards sense gratification, we'll remain forever incomplete. But if we go towards devotional service, we'll attain completeness. And this will become the takeoff for the next verse. How we achieve harmony with the Absolute Truth is described the Isha Vastakas, the Tena Tehna Bhunji. That will discuss in the next part. Any questions? Yes. Please move on to.
Really, this material world is considered to be complete only when it is engaged in Krishna consciousness.
Correct.
So, now what kind of incompleteness is felt by material world? Because it is matter. What kind of incompleteness is felt by it? If it is not
used, well, matter is sentient. Matter does not feel any incompleteness. It is the souls who are living in it who feel they are incomplete. Matter is insentient. So materialistic people feel that there are things wrong, that we need to change. The Stephen Hawking Heroda, he says, you know, look, you are amazing. He's going around the world, whenever he goes, he goes amazing lectures about how this world is the Kalim, Ashashat. He says, we are living in such a dangerous world. Anytime earthquakes may take place, anytime tsunamis may come, anytime environmental catastrophe may come. Therefore, we should make it our topmost priority and put all our funds in transporting the human species to some other planet where we can live more people.
This is not talking about the spiritual world. This is trying to find some other shelter in the material world.
But the problem, with this planet is not that the planet is unstable, it is the karma of the people which is wrong. So if those same people are going to some other planet, they will do bad karma there and they will get the bad reaction there also. At all they are able to go. So it's a very superficial vision. Although it's a very sensationalistic idea. It will transfer all people to some other planet. And especially it appears very attractive when such disasters occur. Now when the tsunami took place, in India about long ago, 10 years ago, at that time Australia, you know, Australia is a big landmark, but it is ultimately an island. So they had a proposal. Let's build a wall all around Australia to protect us from tsunamis. So as long as the images of the disaster were coming, you know, people were ready to contribute funds also. But then they abandoned the plan because of two problems. First problem is how thick, and second problem is how high.
You know, if you become mall, the tsunami might come bigger than the height of the wall.
So when this Japan earthquake came, so tsunami and earthquake happened there. So some people proposed that actually, you know, Japan has remarkable technology by which they make their houses with collapsible material. That means, you know, the roof fall, the roof is not made necessarily of heavy stones. So if it is falling will not cause damage. Much damage. Cynical of that material. So that's why even earthquakes, they have earthquake, which are houses that fall to some extent earthquake resistant. But then what happened? The tsunami came along. And the tsunami came of such a magnitude that the nuclear was a triple disaster. You know, earthquake was there, tsunami was there, and the nuclear reactors, which were at a very high temperature, the coolants got disrupted. And so the temperature started increasing and started exploding. So they said, these earthquakes are so dangerous. Tsunamis are so dangerous. So we should find out technology by which we can make houses in the air. Because at least even if earthquakes occur, we will make houses using magnetic forces. Like magnets, you know, they are north pole houses, there is a particular distance between them. And we will have one magnetic material on the floor, another on the air. And then what we will do is, even if the earthquake occurs, even if tsunami occurs, there is no problem because our houses will be high in the sky. You know, actually, and that is a saying in English, to build castles in the air. You know, to build castles in the air means to imagine things are not possible. But they are trying this. But then the next month what happened? Severe tornadoes have come in the United States now. And then of course if you have castles in the air and tornadoes come.
Gone with the wind. So, this material world is not at all a stable place. The solution is to get out of this material world. Otherwise we try to find out newer and newer ways of getting stable in this world. And ultimately then we'll find newer and newer ways of making us unstable.
The purpose is for us to realize that this world is a temporary place and we have to get out of here. Okay? Any questions? I will stop now. Yes.
Well, also this this material world is considered to be complete because it has its own timescale and design and all. And you
are
mentioning that it is considered to be complete because it has a purpose.
Yes, one of the strongest sources of incompleteness which materialistic people feel with respect to the world is that there is death, that there is destruction. Then why should there be destruction at all? What's wrong if everything could be done? So that materialist people cannot understand. So they think it's a very serious source of incompleteness. So Prabhupada said, yes, everything has its time span, and after its time span, by its own plan it will get destroyed. Now, there are many questions, there was a conference at the turn of the century, I think at least in 2010 only, about what all science doesn't know. So one of the things science doesn't know is why we die. Now, how we die, they know. That means, you know, the body cells deteriorate, the rate of production of cells becomes lower than the rate of destruction, the organs become weak. The biological mechanism that is known. But the purpose of death is not known. You know, they can rationalize that the purpose of death is that actually otherwise there will be population explosion on the planet. But you know, that is just a rationalization, there is not an explanation. You know, you can go on arguing that if there is no birth only, then if there is no birth and there is no death, then there will be no population explosion, they just go on living. So basically, why the material body undergoes its changes?
it grows for some time and starts deteriorating, weakening and dying. Why these changes happen again? It's not explainable phenomenon. So that, why is this word temporary? Because its temporariness will frustrate our desires and eventually make us aspire for something that is eternal. The temporariness of this material world is meant to redirect our desires from the temporary to the eternal. That is its purpose. So unless we recognize this purpose, we will continue to be frustrated. That's why the destruction of the material world by its own time span is also part of its completeness. It also serves this purpose of redirecting the desires of the living entity towards the eternal. Okay? Yes.
I want you to get some understanding of universal form. That is, imaginary real, imaginary real. And then we also hear that material. So, like we have a soul. Now, what is the matter about it? Soul is there. We have a soul. So, what is the soul of the
Well, I have a question about what is the universal form. Is it real? Is it imaginary? Is it material, spiritual? What exactly is it? I have a whole PowerPoint presentation on this. In the course of the session, during the course, we get time to go through it. But I'll make 3 points right now about the universal form. First point is that the universal form is a conceptualized form. Now, there are many terms which come under the universal form. That means, if you see in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, not just in the second canto, many times in the prayers you discuss the sun and the moon are your eyes, the upper planetary systems are your head, the lower planetary systems are your thighs and your legs. That is one description of the universal form. So now, this is a consistent theme within the prayers. Who else? Is the Brahma is offering prayers to the Lord, or Nipa is offering prayers to the Lord, or whoever? This form is a form for meditation. There is no form of the Lord which is rejected. So, Prabhupada explains, I think this is the chapter number 7, the first step in God realization, that for those who think, those who are very materially conditioned, and who think of big in terms of big in size. So, God is great means He has to be great in size. You tell them, oh, God's bones are the mountains. And you say, oh my God, how big God is. His lakes are God's navel. How big God is. So like that they think. So for them, for their conceptualization, because they are thinking, God must be great, so they are going to meditate like this. So now, there is no form of the Lord, there is no roop of the Lord. It's not Mahavishnu, Garbhodasya Vishnu. None of them have Surya and Chandra as their eyes or anything like that. So in that sense, that form does not exist. Now still, you know, you have to understand that spiritual reality is not just black and white, like yesterday we were discussing. If Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considers the river to be Jamuna, is it Jamuna or is it not? You can say it is not, but what is important is not whether it is Jamuna or not. What is important is that he is remembering Krishna. So like that, the Vishwarupa, first of all, there is no form of the Lord which is like that. But if somebody can conceptualize like that and remember God by that, yena kena prakarena mana krishna niveshaye. So it is a useful tool for remembering the Lord. Okay? So the first point is that there is no form of the Lord like that, with the planetary system as his legs and the sun and moon as his eyes. But whatever helps us to remember Krishna, we accept that and we use that. Now, and the Lord, the second point is, the Lord being omnipotent can manifest himself in any form that he wants. So therefore, he can manifest himself as the Vishwarupa. But there is no place where the Vishwarupa exists eternally. Where will he exist? Because everything contains within him. Isn't it? All the planets are within him, so where will he live? But the Lord can grant a vision of how everything is existing within him. So, that means there is no eternal form of the Vishwarupa. But the Lord can manifest himself as the Vishwarupa anytime. So, when the Lord manifests as the Vishwarupa, is that form material or is that spiritual? Then the limbs of that particular form, whatever is being seen, are material. The limbs, the hands, the legs, whatever are there, lower planet, the higher planet, whatever that is, that is material. But because it is the Lord manifesting, so it is considered spiritual. For the Lord manifesting, so it describes that just as every matter is animated by a soul. So our body is animated by the soul. So the Mahatattva, the soul for that is Mahavishnu. For each Brahmanda, the soul is Garbhodakshavishnu. And for each body, the soul is Shivadakshavishnu. So now, our body is activated not by the soul, but by the super soul. Because we have no control over matter. We can desire, I can desire to move my hand, but I don't even know what are the reflex actions which take place, how the motor neuron system is activated, how the hand moves. I simply desire to execute it in super soul. So in that sense, the Lord is present everywhere. So, I summarize that anything that helps us to remember Krishna is helpful, we accept that. So Vishwaroop helps the Gandhanyas to think of Krishna. That's why Gandhanyas, so we accept that. The Lord can manifest himself as Vishwaroop whenever he wants, because he can manifest in any form. And the form of the Lord is that every matter is manifested, every matter is animated by the Spirit. So like that the universe is animated by the Garbhodakshavishnu. So the defining analogy of the Sri Vaishnavas is that the universe is the body and the Lord is the soul. That is the defining analogy of that philosophy. We will discuss that a little later. But in that sense also Vishwaroop. The analogy describes the whole philosophy. The defining analogy for Sri Vaishnavas is that the Lord is the soul and the material world is the body. So, but there is no loka where the Vishwaroop exists. So in that sense you can say the Vishwaroop is not eternal. The Lord can grant that vision. That means, one is, you know, we can conceptualize a form like that, and the second is, the Lord can manifest in a form like that. And both ways, we can be Krishna conscious by that. But the point is, there is no loka where that such a form exists. Okay? Yeah. Last question and we'll stop. See many questions we'll discuss tomorrow.
In the same connection, and you know some forms like Mohini Murti, they are also manifest for some time. So, they are the material of death, this way.
I'll find out. I'll look at the more comments and get back to you. So, if you have any more questions, please note them down. We'll discuss them tomorrow. Thank you very much. Sri Shopanishad ki, Krishna Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki, Gaur Prema. Thank you. Thank you.